This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff Perlman is a longtime author, one of the top authors in the country. Worked for Sports Illustrated. Now this book about the USFL, which has been getting a lot of attention. We ran excerpts in the Chronicle. And the stories that Jeff had about Jim Kelly and the gamblers were through the roof. And I'd like to welcome Jeff. Jeff, thank you very much. You're on with John McLean, Sean Pendergast, and Rich Lord. How are you?
I just want to say that while the University of Delaware may not draw that many Texas residents, we have had two quarterbacks, Joe Flacco and Rich Gannon, lead a team to the Super Bowl. And we also had the Vice President, Joe Biden, as well as Steve Smith, John McCain's campaign manager. All blue hens.
That's not bad.
Wow.
A small state like Delaware, that's not bad at all.
Jeff,
yeah, and Dallas Green.
Jeff, what got you interested in writing about the USFL? How is the book going? And also, tell us all about the Jim Kelly parties.
Well, I always loved the USFL. I'm a kid of the 80s. I was 10 when it started, and I just always, from the time I saw Herschel Walker on the cover of Sports Illustrated wearing a New Jersey Generals uniform, and then I opened the magazine, it was the 83 USFL preview issue, the first season, and all the helmets, you know, the Birmingham Stallions and the Tampa Bay Bandits and the Philadelphia, it was just electric and electrifying, and I always loved it. And I've always been fascinated by leagues that come and go, and the USFL to me is right there with the ABA as far as impact, intrigue, weirdness. You know, they at one point they signed three straight Heisman Trophy winners, Herschel Walker, Mike Rozier, and Jim Kelly. Doug Flutie. Donald Trump is an owner. Among the players, Doug Williams and Brian Simon. This is a really fascinating league. And I always wanted to write about it. And so Jim Kelly, as you guys know, was the quarterback of the Houston Gamblers. And he lived in this mansion. And he would have the party. Here's how crazy Jim Kelly's parties were at his house. The USFL was weird in that the opposing team's cheerleaders would come to the games. They'd travel with the team. So you'd have the Houston Gambler cheerleaders on one side and the visiting team on the other side, cheerleaders. And there were many parties where the visiting team's cheerleaders would be at Jim Kelly's house, but not the visiting team players.
Hey, for a while, there's no doubt. I mean, those Gambler games were a lot of fun at the Dome here in Houston, a lot of excitement. And for a while, the USFL was a real thorn in the side of the NFL, Jeff. And I'm wondering if you can tell us in the time we have, for those of us who were around back then, how would you summarize the ultimate downfall of the USFL? What took them out of the game?
Well, I mean, if we're just being honest here, 1983 was the first season. It was pretty good. And then heading into the second year, the New Jersey Generals were sold to Donald Trump. I always feel like I need to say this is not a political statement. It's not a political book. It's about the USFL. But that being said, Trump bought the Generals, and shortly after buying the Generals, he arranged a secret meeting with Pete Rozelle, the commissioner of the NFL, and said to him, what do I need to do to get an NFL team? I don't care about this league. I just want to use it again in the NFL. What do I have to do? And Rozelle quickly rejected him and said, you will never be an owner in this league. And then Trump really went about destroying the USFL. His goal was to get an NFL team no matter what. So he fought and fought and fought for the USFL to move to fall because he thought then they could force a merger with the NFL and he would have a New York-based franchise. And the whole thing was a disaster, and they ended up suing the NFL for antitrust violations and winning a dollar. So they got greedy, they got dumb, they followed Donald Trump's sort of whimsical desire to go to fall, and it just was a disaster.
Jeff Perlman, author of Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. Jeff, I want to circle back to the Houston Gamblers, and you mentioned the partying and Jim Kelly and the mansion and things like that. To me, the other thing that jumped out about the Houston chapter in the book was the stories of the steroids with the offensive linemen Like, not just that the linemen were using steroids, but they were forbidden, basically, from being a Houston Gambler if they weren't on steroids. Can you tell the audience about that part of it, which they may or may not have been aware of if they were Gambler fans back then?
Yeah, there were a lot of drugs flowing through that clubhouse. And their offensive line coach was a guy named Bob Young, who played a long time offensive line with the St. Louis Cardinals. And Bob Young was a guy, he came in second once when they had the America's Strongest Men competition. He actually came in second. He was preposterously strong and also preposterously juiced. And he was coaching the offensive line, and he would tell the offensive lineman, if you want to play for me on my offensive line, you have to use steroids. It wasn't a suggestion. It was a command. You have to use steroids. And players, I talked to players about the open handing out distribution of steroids from player to player, from coach to player. And the other thing that's funny, the Gamblers were amazing. They had Jim Kelly at quarterback, and they had these wide receivers. And basically what they ran the run and shoot. They hired Jerry Ogovich was the owner, and they hired Mouse Davis from Portland State to be their offensive coordinator before they even hired Jack Pardue to be their head coach. And what they wanted were a bunch of four guys who could run 4.2 40s and catch reasonably well. So if you remember the Gamblers' wide receivers, Ricky Sanders, Clarence Verdan, Gerald McNeil, Richard Johnson, Vince Corville, Scott McGee. It was basically a track team. And the Gamblers' offense was awesome. And they were Earl Campbell, when he was playing for the Oilers, would go to Houston Gambler games. And he would just be so dazzled by the offense because their offense, the Oilers at the time, it was post-bump dubs. He was basically give the ball to Earl, give the ball to Earl, give the ball to Earl. Meanwhile, the Gamblers are lighting it up. So I love that team. And also, I'll tell you real quick, their star wide receiver is Richard Johnson. And before every game, Richard Johnson would smoke a joint to relax for the game. And another wide receiver, Vince Corville, wasn't nearly as good as Richard Johnson, and he never smoked pot. And he decided before one game, I don't know if it's working for Richard Johnson, I'm going to try it. And so he smokes one of his big fat blunts before a game, jogs onto the field, overcome by paranoia and fear, and doesn't have a catch and never smokes pot again.
We're talking to Jeff Perlman, author about the Houston Gamblers and the book he's written about the USFL. June Jones was also the quarterback coach on that team. It's amazing, Jeff, how many came to Houston with the Gamblers, and then Oilers or the University of Houston as well. Something I've always wondered, of all the players the USFL signed, do you believe after doing your book that Reggie White was the best? Was Kelly the best? Or was there someone else?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, four guys went to the whole Pro Football Hall of Fame. White, Kelly, Gary Zimmerman, and Steve Young. I actually think the best player, specifically in the USFL for that time period, was Sam Mills, the linebacker for the Philadelphia Stars. He's also an amazing story at the time. He came out of Division III Montclair State in New Jersey, undrafted, obviously. Went to Toronto with the Argonauts and was cut, didn't make the team. Went to the Cleveland Browns, was cut. And Sam Martigliano was the coach of the Browns, and he called Carl Peterson, the general manager of the Philadelphia Stars, and said, I got a guy I think you should sign, but you're not going to want to sign him. And Peterson's like, well, why would I want to sign him? He's like, he's a 5'9" middle linebacker, and he's probably 5'8". And Peterson says, I'm not signing a 5'9" middle linebacker. And Tigran was like, just give it a try. And then the same thing with Jim Mora, who was the head coach. I'm not signing a 5'9" middle linebacker. Just give him a try. And as you guys know, I mean, Sam Mills went on to be, in my opinion, one of the all-time great middle linebackers in pro football. And that all started because the USFL gave him a chance. And if you watch highlights in the USFL films, the number one guy when it came to sort of stopping the run, and in particular stopping Herschel Walker, was Sam Mills. He used to stand him up all the time.
Jeff, I know you did hundreds of interviews to put this book together. I'm wondering, with so much time gone by, do you find people more or less willing to talk about some of the stuff that in the 80s they wouldn't have been caught dead talking about publicly?
Oh, much more. Much more. It's like I went to Delaware, and my freshman year, I remember my freshman year, these two guys down the hall from me stole a parking meter in front of the library. It's a true story. They stole a parking meter. They brought it back to their dorm room. They somehow got an electric saw. They opened it up and were handing out quarters, right? Now, in the year after that happened, there's no way I'm telling that story to people because that's a felony. But 30 years later, it's a funny story, and you can look back and laugh. And I think that's the same. The Gambler players, this is an example, very open about drug usage, very open about women, about partying, about sort of the excesses of the time, because they didn't look back at it, you know, like stealing a hydrant or a parking meter in front of a library 30 years ago. Things become more and more funny as they fade into time.
Jeff Perlman joining us on the Triple Threat on Sports Radio 610. Jeff, one more question about a story from the book. Seth Payne, who's one of our morning hosts, former NFL player, he's read the whole book, and he wanted me to ask you, he said he's read the whole book, and he still doesn't quite understand why or how two owners traded their entire rosters. That sounds like a fantasy league kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever. So you had the 1983, the Chicago Blitz were really good. The Arizona Wranglers were really bad. And the Chicago Blitz owner was a guy named Ted Dietrich who lived in Arizona, but he owned the Chicago Blitz. And he hated having to make these three-hour flight to Blitz home games, you know, which he flew charter jet, but he hated having to do it. So he went out, he went to the league, and he said he either wanted out or he wanted to switch a team, own the Arizona team. So he worked out this really weird thing where the Blitz became the new Arizona Wranglers. The Arizona Wranglers became the Chicago Blitz. Basically, all the players switched uniforms in cities. So all the Blitz players moved to Arizona. All the Arizona players moved to Chicago. George Allen was the coach of Chicago Blitz in 83. He became the coach of the Arizona Wranglers in 84. And the funny thing is, so now the Blitz were terrible because they were getting the Arizona Wrangler team that stunk. And they hired Marv Levy as the head coach before Marv Levy went to the Bills. But they forgot to tell Marv Levy that he was taking over the sad sack roster. So he shows up thinking he's going to have the team that reached the Eastern Conference semifinals, finals. And instead, he gets stuck with this crappy team with Vince Evans at quarterback and pretty much nothing else whatsoever. So that was the weirdest thing. The whole trade happened because the owner did not want to fly charter jet three times a year for 3 hours.
Wow.
That's incredible. John?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Jeff, while we got you here, I noticed on Twitter you talked about your new book. Give us a quick synopsis of your book that's coming out on the Lakers.
Oh, well, I just started working on it, so it's not going to happen right away. You know, you're always looking to the next book, and I agreed to a deal with Hod Mifflin to write a book about the Shaq Kobe era Lakers. So I've interviewed about 200 people so far. You know, it's just to me, that's a really fascinating era, not just for the NBA, but in L.A. And I live in Southern California, so it's sort of it's all accessible to me. And I went out a couple weeks ago and spent 8 hours with Phil Jackson in Montana, which is really great. I've had a lot of time with guys like Rick Fox and Samaki Walker and different players, and I just view that as a really freaking magical time in NBA history, so I'm pretty psyched to do it.
When you do it, you'll have to come on with us again, and that's author Jeff Perlman. Jeff, thank you very much for coming on. Good luck with the sales of the USFL, and let's do it again.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
There it is, Jeff Perlman. Having read the excerpt that did you guys put up in the Chronicle,
yep,
John, and other excerpts that I was reading
hilarious.
In preparation for this, I am buying that book. Because I was a USFL fan, too. Yep. Like Jeff, I was a little older than Jeff. I was probably 13 or 14. But it was cool having something else to watch. And it had good players. You know, not all, obviously, but it had stars. It was fun to watch.
Jeff's really carved out a name for himself. And he digs really deep on these type of things. He did the unauthorized biographies, I think, of both Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, which I'm sure neither one was very happy about.
Yeah. He's the one that did the infamous story in that sound, John Rocker.
Yeah. John Rocker, sure, yeah.
Had to be like holding in a sneeze for you to not ask a Rocker question, Rich.
Yeah, yeah. Always wondered if he was actually on the F train with him.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.